We should probably get started, and I guess I'll turn it over to you, Rob.
Thank you. My name is Rob Allen. I'm the CEO at Sitka Community Hospital. Thank you for having us here tonight, Mr. Mayor and Assembly members. So we're going to start off the meeting with Cynthia doing a very quick presentation on the report that we had from the PERS termination study. Just a very quick overview of that for you, since that is new information that has just come out. And then I'll introduce the consultants for this groundwater report. So we'll start off with a very brief presentation on the termination study.
Excellent.
Good evening, Cynthia Brandt, CFO.
So initially, just a quick overview of what is PERS defined benefit plan to revisit that. And as you all probably know, it's the Alaska Public Employees Retirement System defined benefit plan. This is not the full population of our employees who are covered under retirement. This relates to those that were hired prior to July 1, 2006, so what we refer to as tiers 1, 2, and 3. There are two components of the benefits that are provided via that defined benefit plan. One is the traditional defined benefit, which we refer to as DB, and the other is called Other Post-Employment Retirement Benefits, or OPEB. And that really is an assortment of health insurance, long-term disability, occupational death, and survivor benefits. And again, just note that employees that came on board July 1, 2006 or later are covered under the defined contribution plan. So when we refer to the termination plan and the unfunded liability, that relates just to the defined benefit portion, tiers 1, 2, and 3. So how is PERS defined benefit currently funded? Two mechanisms, through the hospital operations. Mechanically, biweekly, we make biweekly payments that are based on 22% of payroll. And then there's another piece that the state contributes on behalf of the hospital. So those are the two primary funding sources. And those amounts that we contribute on an annual basis do two things. They fund benefits during the current period, and then they also fund portion of the unfunded pension liability. So that's inherently included in the 22% that's contributed on an annual basis.
And Cynthia, the on behalf, is that the same about 4.2% or whatever that we get at the city?
It's comparable, yes. And it fluctuates by year, and as you may remember, back in 2005, when there was a big influx, the state pumped about $4 billion into the plan. Our contribution was much, much higher that year. Our on-behalf payment was over $4 million that year.
Thank you.
So the question arises in terms of what happens if PERS defined benefit plan is terminated. And to answer that question, the first step is to request that the state of Alaska perform what's called a termination study. And that request was put forth by the hospital. State of Alaska contracted with their actuaries, Congruent is the name of the firm, to perform the study. And then we just literally received the report, which you guys have a copy of. And that led us to take action to conduct a few different phone calls, basically to talk with the folks who prepared the report, the State of Alaska Retirement Board representative, and we also talked to our auditors just to gain an understanding of what the report included and what it was telling us. And then, of course, leadership and Rob crafted a memo to distribute to the board, to the assembly, to the press. And really what drove our question was, what's the bottom line? And there's a lot of technical jargon that underlines pensions, and we really wanted to know, what's the bottom line? What checks are going to have to be cut? Who cuts them? Just to really get it into very simplistic terms. And so the bottom line upon termination is that there'd be a $35.2 million, and let me just preface all of this by saying this is based upon actuarial assumptions, current statute, and a termination date. We had to give them a date, but a termination date of February 1st, 2018. So to the degree that any of those change, it would, of course, change the numbers. So these are based upon those facts that we know today. So $35.2 million would be the city's liability to fully fund the plan. That takes care of the unfunded liability for both components of that defined benefit plan. How do we arrive at that? It's annual payments would be required, and give or take $1.6 million for 22 years. So the question may be, why 22 years? And again, back to the assumptions that come from the state's actuary, is that it's estimated that this unfunded liability would be fully satisfied by the year 2040. So 22 years out into the future, based upon all the pieces that feed into it today.
That's whether the hospital closed or not. This is the state number. So the city's 22% we have to pay for all of our employees also is projected to disappear in about 22 years.
Well, we'd still have the annual ongoing cost as long as the plan were alive, but every biweekly pay period, we're actually currently funding part of that unfunded liability.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
I get confused by pronouns sometimes. You said we figured this to be? Is this a document that you did, or is this a document that the state did?
The state's actuaries prepared the termination study, and then we gained interpretation from them of what was in the study.
Okay, so this is your interpretation of the study?
And it was confirmed by the state representative that we spoke with on the phone.
Thank you.
You can find these numbers on their cover sheet from the actual termination study. It's in there. You have to pick it out.
So the $35.2 million is funded by annual payments, and then there's also a lump sum that would be due at termination, and based upon the factors I mentioned earlier, that would be $645,000. And that's just required by statute. At termination, and then the $1.6 million, give or take, each year thereafter until 2040 or the plan's fully funded. Again, the 2040 is just what the current assumption is as to how long it's going to take to fund it. The state also clarified or pointed out to us, actually, that this is not a liability that the city could effectively transfer. The checks would have to be cut from the city to the state of Alaska, and that would be the case even if the city were having this funded by another party. So it would still have to pass through the city to the state, because the state would continue to view the employer of the plan as being the city and borough. So that's really the Reader's Digest condensed version.
So the $1.6 million a year, how does that compare to the 22% premium we currently pay? Is that the same, or is it additional?
It's actually, well, it's less.
Okay.
Currently, it gets a little complicated to talk about our annual pension expense, because we also have defined contribution that feeds into it. If we just isolate out the employer portion of our defined benefit, the employer portion of both plans is about $2.5 million. And the defined benefit portion is about $1.7 million. So it's in the ballpark of that $1.6 million. But keeping in mind that there's a lot of underlying calculations in this, and what we wouldn't have to be funding going forward would be the current service cost. That is the benefits that are being earned during the current year would not be funded forward, so it would just be picking up what the unfunded portion is.
Okay. Thank you. If anyone has questions, I don't mean to be driving things here, so please speak up. There's lots of info in these few words. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay, well, I will then jump into why we're here this evening, which is to look at present our Plan B and how Sitka Community Hospital can be sustainable over the long term. And this came about, the Plan A and Plan B terms came about from a strategic planning session we had with our board back in the spring. And we're talking about, you know, how and what are we going to do to be sustainable in the long term. And we set it as a goal over the next several months to work on a Plan B and look at some alternatives and some different ways of performing to, you know, change what we're doing to be sustainable. We had that in that meeting with the Assembly where, again, we were talking about sustainability and long-term and were directed to come back with that plan. So, you know, that it came out of a board action to start with and then the Assembly asking for the detail on it. Again, with the board plan, we were looking at having it done in the fall time. But, you know, the timeline of having something ready by late May was, we felt, it, we just didn't have the staff time to focus on it, to do that in that short a time. So with our board's approval, we moved forward to engage Stroud Water to produce and come up with a strategic, financial, and operational assessment, which we'll be presenting. What you have actually in front of you is the abbreviated version focusing on five strategic initiatives. So we do have a much larger document that's still in draft form. Our board is still reviewing it. We're expecting to accept it and to have the final draft version at the end of this month at our after our July board meeting. So once we have that as a final document, then we'll make that available to Sarah to provide to the Assembly, and we'll be posting it on our intranet and internet as well. So that fully fleshed out plan will be available to you. That's a much longer report. It's over 100 pages, and it was, you know, has a lot more detail on some other initiatives and such that that we're operationally looking at as well. And I just want to also be clear that this study was not done as the intent was not as a rebuttal of the ECG report and what they were recommending towards search and the. Any kind of collaboration or cooperation or merger with them. This was strictly looking at our operations and how we can be successful long-term in a standalone form. I also wanted to emphasize that my goal as CEO, since I've been here now just over a couple of years, is to continue to strengthen the financial position of the hospital and increase the resources we have available to fulfill our mission here in Sitka. Part of that, I feel, it's very important that if the Assembly and the community decide that they want to look at some sort of sale of the hospital or merger acquisitions, some kind of future collaboration of any sort, that we do it from a position of strength, that we're in a good financial position to negotiate that we're not doing it from the fact that we're broke and about to close down. So I feel that this leads us to it. This is a good path forward for us. And as I mentioned, there are two aspects of this report. You'll be hearing mostly about the five initiatives that Stroudwater has identified, some of which require board decision and discussion and guidance. As examples, you know, we'll be looking at the labor and delivery program and the surgery program. No decisions have been made, you know, on those. And this is just another source of information for our board to take into account as we're making decisions about changing what we do. Those are board decisions, and we will, you know, we'll look to provide them as much information as they need to make decisions to move us forward. The other aspect that you really don't see is a lot of the operational and cost report changes that we can make in our operations even now. And some of the projects we've actually have been working on even before this report. So these are things that we can do now that will start having an impact fairly soon. Even today, we spent all day with 30 of our managers and staff and the consultants working on action plans on a bunch of these items on ways we can move forward. So we've been very excited about that. We had a lot of people working very hard on these action plans, coming up with some timelines and steps we can take, who's going to be responsible. And we think that you know, we'll start to see results pretty darn soon. I wanted to introduce the consultants and who will be doing the presentation. And they can come from Stroud Water, which is based in Portland, Maine. And they're we're dealing with part of the firm that is, specializes in rural and critical access hospitals. So Eric Schell is going to be, I think, taking the lead. This is Eric here. I've seen Eric present at a couple of different ASHNA conferences, and ASHNA is the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. So I have seen Eric in action. He's very knowledgeable. He has over 20 years with Stroud Water, over 26 years in the industry. He's very familiar with Alaska. He's done a lot of work around the state, including just recently extensive work on the Kenai Peninsula, with working with the hospitals there. He's also done, in the past, he has done work both for Sitka Community Hospital and for SEARCH. His specialty, again, is critical access hospital financial and reimbursement issues and rural hospital performance improvements. Jonathan Pattenberg here has been with Stroud Water for over a year, and he comes out of kind of the operations side. So his most recent job at a critical access hospital was in Hawaii, where he was both the CFO and the COO, so the Chief Financial Officer, Chief Operating Officers, and again, specializes in critical access and hospital improvement projects. So I'm going to turn the project over, or the presentation over to them. Also in the audience, we do have Brian Bertacci, who is our board chair. At any point when we get into the question and answer period, he's available to come up and answer questions if you have questions you think would specifically be for a board member. So I'll turn it over.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and City Assemblyman, for having us back. This is probably my fifth time back in Sitka, Alaska, so have some experience here. And as Rob said, have some experience working all over the state of Alaska. We might be from Maine, but we get to come out here quite often over the past 15 years. A little bit about Stroud Water. We're a firm of 25.
There's a request from the back if you could speak directly in your microphone.
Oh, okay.
Our sound system sometimes a little sensitive.
Sure. It's just a little bit about our firm. We're a 25 consultant firm. Eight of us work strictly with small and rural hospitals all over the country. Over my past almost 20 years at Stroud Water, I've had a chance to work with over 350 small rural hospitals. Majority of those have been critical access hospitals. So really get to see a lot and get to go to all great parts of the country and see great things. So anyway, we were asked, as Rob introduced, to take a look at Sitka Community Hospital from a financial, operational, strategic perspective to say, is there an opportunity to improve the current financial position, kind of implementing best practices that we get to see in rural hospitals all over the country? Jonathan and I came here. We were here the last week of May, and over the last 5 weeks pulled together a report that hopefully will show you that there is some opportunity here. And what we'd like to do is just kind of get in and talk a little bit about that. So clearly the overview is most of you know very well about what your hospital is. 12-bed critical access hospital with an attached 15-bed nursing home, providing services, long-term care, primary care, emergency medicine to residents of Sitka, Alaska. It's a municipal general hospital governed by a board of directors appointed by the assembly of the city. Back a year ago, you engaged a consultant to look at, essentially come up with a common vision for healthcare in this island and working with in a relationship between SEARCH and Sitka Community Hospital. As part of that process, the consultant looked at some recommendations or some proposals around how to align more closely together. There was a recommendation made. A proposal were submitted back in May when we were here a few weeks ago. Again, this, why we were here, was to say, is there another way to think about this? Is there, we keep hearing the phrase, plan B. and in terms of, you know, improving the financial performance of this hospital. I like to think of kind of performance in a hospital and alignment opportunities from Stephen Covey and his models of dependency, where dependent you think of as your 5-year-old, independent your 18-year-old, and interdependent your 26-year-old. And we like to think we all want to get to that interdependent relationship, at least that's what they tell me. And we've got to become independent first. And I look at this and say, you know, is there an opportunity for Sitka Community Hospital to become independent first before considering stronger levels of relationship or higher levels of relationship, that interdependent relationship? Part of our project we did is we created a pretty sophisticated financial forecast going out 10 years. It's sophisticated from a critical access hospital because your Medicare revenue as a critical access hospital is reimbursed on a cost basis. So to some degree, for 10 years, you have to simulate out your cost projections, which then drive your Medicare payment. And that's why these models become a little bit more difficult than just running, you know, normal, regular hospital financials. So that was done as part of this study. At the highest level, we actually looked at, you know, kind of what are the fewest number of recommendations that we could kind of put numbers and we come up with a return that were modeled into the report. As part of that, we actually kind of put an expected probability, the likelihood that we could achieve these recommendations, and then the estimated annual impact based on what we see and some of the numbers that we ran. The opportunities that we have built into the model, we built them in individually and then all in, were cost report improvements. And this is the cost report is a document that essentially it's a document that critical access hospitals file every year with Medicare. And essentially what they do is they say, if Medicare is 40% of your business, its document helps you figure out what 40% of your costs are, and Medicare will pay you those costs. So there were some improvement opportunities that were going to result in about $500,000 of opportunity, and that was modeled into the report. There was an opportunity that many critical access hospitals in frontier communities in states outside of Alaska, it's an opportunity that they've pursued where if you have, you know, either less than or about 25 total beds between your nursing home and your critical access hospital, you can convert your nursing home beds to critical access hospital beds, provide the same level of service, but get paid additional dollars. This has been going on in states in Washington and in Oregon, and you know, we actually did it with a hospital in Maine and in upstate New York, where you know, just this conversion and the way the cost report, this document works, rural hospitals, critical access hospitals are able to pick up some pretty decent return. The impact on your organization was about $1.1 million when we modeled this out. And we put an expected probability about 75%. We did look at the discontinuation of OB services. We did 35 deliveries last year. When you look at the numbers, the cost that would come out versus the revenue that would come out and a discontinuation of this service, we assumed about $190,000 benefit to our bottom line over the each year. Surgery services, many rural hospitals this size in frontier communities don't provide 24/7 general surgery. It's usually a daytime scheduled procedure. We modeled that in, and it was about $190,000 pickup for this organization. And then the last we modeled in about, we called it clinic optimization. The Mountainside Clinic has an opportunity to increase patient visits, you know, doing things that where the industry is going right now, which is actually towards health and you know, kind of, different types of visits around, you know, chronic disease management and promotion of health and wellness exams, these types of things, all opportunities, as well as an opportunity around the 340B discount drug program where safety net providers, including critical access hospitals, are essentially enter into this program and can receive additional return from their drugs. So in this financial model, we want to make sure that we built in the conversion to the Cerner at about a $2.9 million cost, And then we assume for all 10 years about a $550,000 investment in capital costs, both plant and equipment. So implementing all of the recommendations that were identified, these five recommendations, had a net impact on income of about $2.4 million with a cumulative impact on cash position over 10 years of about $24 million to the positive. And we'll get a little bit into the financial model, but that's the high level. Those were the five things we modeled out. Each of them, you can see the expected probability and real opportunity for this organization. Sure, yeah, lots. And then
go ahead, Tristan.
Yeah, just a quick question on the expected probability. For those percentages, are those kind of a zero-sum game? Is it, you know, all or nothing, or would you, let's say we said the estimated annual impact of clinic optimization was only 500,000, our assumptions are scaled back, would you increase that probability? You know, same thing for kind of cost report improvements, or, you know, is there some kind of flexibility in terms of?
Well, I mean, there is. What we said is that this is the likely financial impact in the right-hand column, the $490,000 in cost report impacts, based on us doing some, you know, running some scenarios, running it through the model. That's the likely financial impact from, there was about three or four different just tweaks to this document. And so we put that at 85%, very high percent, because it's just a matter of tweaking the cost report. It's not dependent on anybody else except for just changing some numbers and putting things in a different box. If the benefit is only $350,000, then there's $140,000 plug to hole, or a hole to plug that doesn't, it won't tie out to the model as projected. Yeah.
So thank you. That was, I'm trying to get my head wrapped around the expected probability.
Yeah.
So what you're actually saying, it's not like a 85% chance that you'll get $490,000, but I guess I'm trying to figure that out. So let's look at the $1.1 million question where it says there's a 75% expected probability.
So when we did the financial model and convert the long-term beds into the critical access hospital beds, the financial impact will be around $1.1 million given last year's cost and this year's 2017's volume assumptions. Okay, the benefit will be about $1.1 million. The 75%, we put a very high reliability on that. One, because every other state in the union that has moved in this direction has got this approved. The reason why there's a 25% hold factor is because we still have to count on somebody else, the state Medicaid program, to essentially approve this. Now, we want to go to the state and say there's an opportunity for us to give the state a little bit by reducing the rate that they're paying to our nursing home residents, and we can still pick up a significant return. So the 75%, the 25% reduction factor really is due to the fact because while this has happened every other state out there, we're relying on someone else to make a decision on our behalf. The other ones are all about decisions we can make.
And it's, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess getting to that particular item, which I've kind of noted here, you say that it's happened virtually in every other state.
Yes, sir.
Keeping in mind that we're in a somewhat unique situation here where we already have two hospitals with X number of beds.
Correct. Yeah.
Are you still as confident that the state would say, we'd be happy to reimburse you more for
Couple reasons why. Great question. Couple reasons why. One is that there's five kind of frontier critical access hospitals in this state between Cordova, Seward, Wrangell, Petersburg, right? And I think Seward is the fifth one. Sitka. So the hospital association right now is hearing from these very frontier communities that they're all struggling. And so the hospital association is actually the one leading this charge. Once we identified this issue about 5 weeks ago when we were here, the hospital association, ASHNA, is now leading this charge because they see this as a real opportunity to help out these frontier communities. The second thing I would say about it being a success is that several years ago, I was involved in a project. It was a CMS, Medicare demonstration program, where they were looking at the critical access hospital program specific to frontier communities. The frontier rural hospitals, critical access hospitals, were saying, this program doesn't work for us anymore. And so under this demonstration program that I actually helped develop the reimbursement system for, CMS wanted to look at opportunities to help support frontier communities. They came up with an approach. This is called the FCHIP, the Frontier Community Hospital Integration Project. It's demonstrated it was authorized under the Affordable Care Act. And under this program, one of the opportunities was to have these nursing homes actually do exactly what we're talking about. So Medicare is on board with this to support frontier community hospitals just like this, just like those others that we mentioned here in Alaska.